5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, good evening. It is the new Panic Room episode 226 on the 11th of March 2021, and it's Thursday again, and it just seems like it was just Thursday sort of yesterday. Here we are. Again, with the same old nonsense. They haven't taken us off the air yet. They did. They did the other week because we tried to get on and they just wouldn't let us. So, you know, maybe the regime don't like it, man, you know? Not that we're subversive. Really. I don't think we're subversive, but we could be. Maybe we should have a subversive show. I'd be up for that. And I know who else would be up for that as well. I'm going to bring her on now. Why isn't tomorrow Saturday? We've got this all. We should be doing this on a Friday night. And I'm just have because I can't. I can have a sleep in tomorrow because it's my daughter has a work from home day. It just shows you how little Yay. They do at school. She gets all the work from home day done in literally like 45 minutes, an hour tops, and that includes looking around, time, playing with the dog, whatever, texting, all the things that do young people do these days, and she gets it all done and she's acing her grades, so stupidly fucking easy, you know. It's just I don't know what they're learning, you know. You have a conversation with
either.
Them and it's like stuff that I learned in elementary school, and it's like what's that. She learns more having a conversation with me, and this is not me bigging myself up, she has more learns more from a conversation with me than she does from a whole day of school, to be honest.
You know, I can't even disagree with that. There'll be times that my son will come to me and he'll say something that's just, I'm like, wow, did you learn that in school? No. You know, so I mean, yeah, I don't know what they're teaching him in school either.
He's learning more from school than, you know, more from reading outside of school than he is from anywhere else, you know. It's frightening.
But you know, and I still can't homework, man. He'll joke with me and say he needs help with his math homework, and you know, it all looks and you know, I was good in school. I was good in school. I even, you know, have some college under my belt, and I take a look at the math he's doing and I just laugh.
When my daughter was at elementary school and she was doing this core math, whatever they call it, I have a good education. I have a university education. I am smart. I have an IQ of 146. I did not understand it. And I was actually having a day at school, elementary school, did a thing where you know, dads would go in and you'd just hang around for the day. And it sounds creepy, doesn't it? But it's not. and it's a good way of getting dads involved, you know. And I remember sitting in on a class and I said, I'm sorry. He's doing this long, literally just to add two numbers together. I did it in my brain in a tenth of a second. My daughter could do it in a tenth of a second. And here you are 20 minutes later, you've got to do this. And you lost me. Honestly, absolutely no idea what you're talking about, woman. No, I. And to be fair, the teacher said, "We have to teach this." She said, "We have to teach it," and it's like, "Well, I guess they don't have any choice, I suppose, if it's the curriculum."
Oh, it's awful, though. It's just awful. It really, really is awful. It creates all these different steps, and that you just don't need. And yeah, you wind up at the end going, "What? It is. It's very confusing."
Well,
my
dad did with me is I taught kids mental arithmetic, the importance of mental arithmetic, and they can. I mean, my son always used to get into trouble at school because, he'd do the math problem, he'd get it right, but then he'd get marked down because he hadn't shown his working, so I didn't need to, I did it in my head.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
they don't like
exactly.
that.
Yes.
Oh, they don't like that. You can't think.
No.
You can't think, boy. If you go
true.
Against,
yeah.
you know, and it, the whole core thing, and, you know, the teacher tried to explain it to me, and then she tried to explain to me why. And all, the best she could do as well, it's we have to.
Yeah,
you know, the district, they all hide behind that, it's the district, you know?
There's this meme that goes around, and it's a pretty simple math problem. It's got, you know, the parentheses and the, you know, times and division. But it's a simple, you know, simple one if you work it out the way you're supposed to. And I see that, you know, all the people who are like my age and older all have, you know, the right answer. And then the younger kids come and they have something totally different and they will argue with you why they're right. And I'm like, but you're wrong. You know, it's gotten bad, and I fear for our younger generations. You know, and it's the same with like cursive; they don't teach that anymore. And you know, I see people arguing, well, are they ever going to use it? You know, probably not. But at the same time, you know, I don't know. I hate to see it, you know, getting lost in the. My daughter, she's 22. I don't think she can read cursive, and I think that's just.
Oh,
that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. They said they taught it for like a week, and you know, after that, that's it. But when I was in school, after they taught it to you, you couldn't print anymore. I mean, you had to write in cursive, or you'd get.
When I was a kid, we got to, I think it was second year in middle, maybe it's first year in middle school, perhaps, and we called it joined up writing. In my day, it was joined up writing because it is what it is, and you know. Yeah. Although now my handwriting has been brilliant, and now it's just pretty much scribble. It is literally. I sometimes struggle to read my own handwriting. I do.
Yes.
I do. I had to stop. Now I use my phone. I use a list in my phone for when I go to the grocery store, because the number of times I would go now. Yeah. I've got my little list on a you know, little slip of paper or on a post-it, whatever. And the number of times I'd get to something, and what is that? What? And I couldn't read it. whatever it was, clearly we didn't need it.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It's not that important because I didn't buy whatever it was, and we didn't go, oh, that's what, that we missed that. That's what it was. Never, not once. You know, which is crazy.
Well, I've had things on my planner say that, you know, I have to do a, you know, certain thing at a certain time, and I'm like, I have no clue what that is. I guess it's definitely not getting done today. So, you know, I hope it wasn't too important.
Yeah,
I have bad writing. So I used to tell my children I was practicing for when I became a doctor. You know, that's how bad my handwriting was. Yeah.
I've actually had people say to me, you know, with handwriting like that, you really need to be a doctor, you know. Like, well, you know, people would die, to be honest, because, you know, the pharmacy, by the time trying to figure out what I'd written, that the patient just died in CVS there, you know. Cause, oh, sorry.
You know.
Sorry.
That is pretty scary if you really think about it, that these doctors, I mean, you've seen their chicken scratch, yet the pharmacy just fills the prescription. Who knows what they could be giving people? Oh my God, I don't even want to think about it.
Well, exactly.
It's scary.
It's just blah, 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 and maybe I think they just make it. The doctor just scribbles something, and the pharmacist just it just gives you what he's trying to shift that day. You know.
Yeah.
What the pharmacy's going.
Like,
you know, if I get rid, get rid of this. Then well, that's how it used to work in England. I think they stopped. They made it illegal to offer incentives because again, I actually tried to become a medical rep many, you know, back in the day when I was in my sales years. And one of the things, literally, you would go to the doctor and you've got your drug A to sell, and you would sit down with the doctor and you get your appointment and say, well, if you, how many of your patients, you know, would benefit from this? I'm using, you know, just as a random, this, you know, erection drug, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, I've got 200 patients with, you know, erectile dysfunction. Well, okay, you know, and it, literally, you do that. Well, if you put 100, you put 100 or more onto this, and you sell X and Y, you'll get a free Caribbean cruise. And that was how drugs were sold. It wasn't what the best drug was. The best drug was for you. It's what the incentives were. And I believe they put, certainly in England, they put a stop to that because it was just, they were just taking the piss. You know, the fact you'd be prescribed something, your doctor, and the doctor said, oh, I'm going to try something different just to see how it goes. No, I'm trying to do something different. I want to win a telly. And that's what, and the ironic thing is, they call it, that was the market sector is called ethical drugs, as opposed to over-the-counter drugs, which is obviously stuff you just go and buy yourself. And it was called ethical drug sales. And it was like, the more I looked at it, I thought, where's the ethics? Seriously, where are the ethics involved in
that? Yikes.
Yeah.
Scary.
But,
yeah.
It was very scary. It was an eye-opener for me, I have to say. They maybe saw that in me. I never got past. I think once I got to like third interview, and then something went horribly wrong and didn't get the jobs. Bollocks to them, really.
You know. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think you are a pleasant, personable person, but
I'm not. No.
You know.
don't lie. I'm not. I know I'm what I am. I'm, you know, I've never been pleasant ever.
I think it is. I don't know if I can see you as a, you know, like a salesperson or something, because you don't really, I don't think you're really fond of many people, and I think you have to, you know, pretend to like them at least.
Yeah. No, I used to, my formative career was in sales, actually. I've worked for a Toyota. Worked for Duracell. I worked for such big companies. In sales, I believe it or not, I'm an incredibly good salesperson. I was very successful, and I had all the trappings and fat salaries and company cars and expense accounts and blah de blah de blah. I think being a sociopath probably helps. Be honest, probably helps.
You can
switch it on and switch it off, and I think that is the big and I remember when I was at university, and we sort of had interviews with, and I was having interviews with pharmaceutical companies at the time, and they give you this thing, they say, you know, are you a sociable person, do you like being around people, because it's sales, I'm sociable and I love da 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 da, and they're not looking for that. They're looking for people who can spend large amounts of time on their, because in sales, you know, certainly field sales, you're in the car your own 8 hours a day. In those 8 hours, you maybe do two meetings. And it's a lot of alone time. And people who crave company in the office environment just don't survive 2 minutes. They just don't.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed the trappings and the lifestyle. Great, and it was, you know, out for drinks and staying away, and happy days. And it makes me sound old to say it, but it is a young man's job, I have to say.
I did telemarketing for about 2 weeks, maybe, and I was awful at it. You know, I thought I would be great.
Really?
I was like, you know,
I don't
I'm
believe
personable.
I would buy anything
I
from
know.
You. I really would.
You know, I think I agree. But no, I was awful. I would start my spiel and, you know, they would just be mean right away and I'd want to cry. You know, it was awful. Yeah, and so I had another job where I worked for Ford, And all I did was call people up that had just bought a vehicle and ask them to take a survey. I mean, it, it wasn't the same as just, you know, I'm selling you some crap.
I'm going to sell you something,
I mean,
yeah,
this was the people who just bought a vehicle, and that was my job to call them and ask them to take a survey. And again, they were just so mean, and most of the time they hung up on me. And again, I was like, man, I just wanted to cry every day. I was like, this is not a job for me. So,
Well, I have to say, and for the listener at home, and again, coming from working in the motor trade, those surveys are very, very important for the dealership. You know, they are measured by the manufacturer on those. Their bonuses can be, you know, from the manufacturer can be based upon their customer satisfaction surveys. You know, a lot of motor manufacturers take that incredibly seriously. So if they're, you know, just always do. I always make an effort to feed him because when I bought my car the year before last, you know, I did. I felt they actually phoned, nice young lady phoned me. You know, and I spent 5 minutes, and I actually told her that the guy who sold me the car, he should give him a bonus because he deserves it, because he put up with me for one. And he listened. He listened. I went I said, because I'd done all my homework, I'd gone in, I picked out the car, and I phoned him. I said, right, if I'm going to test drive the car. If it drives well, I'm going to buy it. I don't need to sell me shit. I've got my finance. I've got everything sorted out. I was in and out in an hour. Done. And he was great. He didn't try to oversell me, all these different things. He was just, right, okay, you've done this, is it. Hand over the, pay your deposit, you fill the paperwork in, off you go. And it was great.
Good.
What a nice guy.
Good deal.
I will buy my next car from him. I will find out where he is.
Nice.
Buy my car from him, whether he wants me to or not.
Right, right.
Oh, God, he's him again. He's that long character. Make him go away. Oh, that's I could talk motor trade all night. What are we going to the show this evening?
I am excited. We have a great show tonight. Our first guest of the night is dark fantasy writer Daniel Brom, and a little later in the show we'll have USA Today bestselling author Cora Kenborn. So a bunch of exciting things. Yeah.
I'm always excited. You dig up the most fascinating people. I don't know where you get them from. Hopefully you do let them out of your basement eventually. I think we should bring our first guest on because I'm getting bored with you.
All right, our first guest of the night is dark fantasy writer Daniel Brom.
Woo! Good evening.
Good evening, James. Good evening, Xtina. How are you all?
We're great. Do you know, it's funny, before the show, we were miserable. I was making Xtina miserable, to be honest. We were having a right miserable time. But here we are, it's great. Do you know, it's a sad indictment of my life, certainly, that this is the highlight of my week. So maybe I do need to get out more, I think. So how are you, Daniel?
I'm doing great. Just you described it well. I need to get out more, and now that the broadcast vibrations are shining on me, I'm A-okay.
Excellent. Hurrah!
You know, it was funny, James. You said something about you don't know where I get the guests or anything, and to be honest, after you know, because a lot of times they are booked a couple months in advance. So by the time that they come on the show, I'm not sure either where I've got them from. So I'll be looking through my emails and stuff. And I'm
who is that?
It's weird because, I Daniel actually sent me his book, and it was so cool because it said on the inside, you know, thanks for having me on the show. And I was like, oh, my God, how come I don't remember him being on the show? And I was looking through our old shows and everything. I was totally freaked out. So.
And he hadn't been on yet. That's excellent.
Yeah. But it's happened to me before. You know, we had a guy on the show that I had edited his book. But it's different when you read a book and when you work on a book. It's just totally different. So
absolutely,
he's on
yeah.
the show, and he's talking about his book, and I'm going, wow, that sounds so familiar. And it took me a while. Yeah, it was awful. So, you know, I kid with myself, and I'm like, it's just your blonde roots showing. And, you know, I'm not blonde, of course, but I blame
well,
that.
Maybe
anyway,
you need
so.
To be. I think that's the same. You need to be.
Yeah. So, Daniel, you're here to talk to us about your book, Underworld Dreams. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, Underworld Dreams is a collection of short stories. They're supernatural horror stories, much like the old Twilight Zone TV shows. So all the stories have a bit of intentional ambiguity to them. So it's full of tension between what's real, what isn't, what's psychological, and what's supernatural, and a little bit of a nutshell there.
I like it. You know, I have to say that I think, well, these are both psychological and supernatural. Both of them are really scary for me in different ways. But sometimes when I watch a movie that you know, all the way through it, you're like, man, is this psychological or is this supernatural? I have to say, when it's not supernatural, I'm a little let down. Like, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'll always be okay if it's a good story and it was smart and entertaining. But if I have my way, let's bring on the ghosts. So let's bring on the monsters.
Yeah.
If I have my way, but I'm open to it. I'm open to it.
Definitely. Now, you know, there's something to be said about a good, you know, psychological, or, you know, when you're watching it, you're like, man, there was a book I read, I think it was like last year, and they made it into a movie on Netflix, I think, and my kids have watched it, and they both said it made absolutely no sense. And then she tried to describe it to me, and I'm like, well, yeah, the book didn't make any sense either. So, I don't know. I'm kind of confused about it. I mean, I didn't hate it when I stopped reading it, but I was like, I just don't get it. And, you know, I kind of want to get it.
Yeah, I think you're making a great point there. I mean, that's the danger when you work in this kind of horror, when you try to be subtle and you try to be close to the edge there. You have to get it right. You have to be entertaining. You have to keep your reader, or you're going to have that reaction that you just said. You're like, well, I wanted to like it, but I was left out in the cold. So I understand how that goes. You know, I like to have stories that are still, while that tension is going on, there's something at stake and meaningful to just, you know, good old-fashioned good characters with something at stake in their lives.
Definitely. I don't know. For you, I think we kind of touched on it, but do you prefer the psychological ending or the more, I mean, I know you said ghost, but I mean.
Is that question?
I'm hearing an awful echo here, so I'm like totally thrown off. Like, I keep hearing my voice back at me here, so.
Yeah, is that question to me? I'm having a rough time with the echo as well.
I can't hear the echo. I'll tell you what we're gonna do. I'm gonna put some music on. You two, hang up, and then redial back in. See if it fixes it. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay, I'm gonna do that because I wanna play this. What am I gonna play? I'm gonna play this. there's a jolly a bit of Stray Cats. That was my favourites. Hopefully, bring Xtina on. Hopefully, we'll fix the technical issue. Xtina, are you there?
I'm here.
And do you
I
have
don't
an
hear
echo?
An echo yet.
There
I
you
don't
go.
Yet. I don't think so.
Let's try Daniel, shall we?
Hello, Daniel. I'm here. How are you two?
Hello, we are still getting... Has the echo gone away now?
I think so.
I can't tell. We'll give it a go. We'll give it a go.
If we can't tell, then it's gone. Brilliant. And okay, you can thank me later for being, you know, fixing it. I guess we've just done the equivalent of switching it off and switching it on again. But
that's the extent of my troubleshooting, which is kind of hitting it really hard, something electronic, or in case of an old car, just sweet talking to it.
Yeah,
I was fine with
fine with computers, throwing the mouse at the wall often helps.
Okay,
a little technical tip for everyone out there.
I'm getting smarter as the show goes on.
It's funny, I only ever buy these two for $14.99 mice from Amazon because I get through mice like you would not believes. There's something going on. The mouse is the first thing to get. I feel sorry for them, actually, but the mouse is always the first one to get it. Something goes wrong, the mouse is hitting the wall. You know, so... Right, we're now on track, and Daniel is here talking about Underworld Dreams. Hopefully, you have an excerpt for us, Daniel.
Yeah, I have an excerpt whenever... Whenever you're ready for it.
Yeah, hey, the airwaves are yours, so have at it.
Okay, great, yeah. So the excerpt is from a short story. It's called How to Stay Afloat When Drowning, and it appears in the book Underworld Dreams, and it was also reprinted in a book called Best Horror of the Year, Volume 12, which was edited by Ellen Datlow. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it here. It's just the backstory of one of the characters, so I'll launch into it here. The silver setting reminds me of a wave curving around the small blue opal and two tiny diamond dots. The plan is to ask her to marry me at the lodge at night after we see our... Maybe I'll draw a bat while we're down here, Nina says. All the bouncing on the dreadful road making voice vibrate funny. The awful bus ride doesn't dampen her spirit, and she kisses me as we lug our bag from the bus stop to the shore. The roaring ocean and clean air are so welcome. We're warned by the two boatmen not to go in while we're waiting for all the passengers. After 10 minutes or so, they decide there are no other passengers. There's water in the bottom of the wooden boat. The older man pushes off the beach and jumps in. The boatman on the motor guns it as we crash through the wave line. The boat catches air and lands with a heavy thunk. The older boatman leisurely bails water with half of a plastic jug. The only way to the lodge, swells lift and drop us. I don't like the look of the waves we're going to have to pass through, nor the way the boatmen are bickering in Spanish. It's rough, the younger boatman says to me. We may have to go back and try again tomorrow. But it's almost dark, I say. Where are we going to stay? Don't sleep on the beach, he says. The sandflies are not very nice. The men speak to each other in Spanish. We're going to try? I ask. The boatman guns the engine. I grasp Nina's hand. The water in the bottom has soaked our packs. The older boatman is bailing in earnest now. A big swell lifts and drops us. We spin and wind up with our port side facing land. The boatmen yell at each other as the boat is dragged along parallel to shore. Waves hit from all sides. The water fills up faster than the old boatman can bail. Can you swim? The boatman asks. What's happening? I ask. Kiss your wife and pray. The older boatman stops bailing and throws a small wooden crate overboard. Then a full jug of something, motor fuel maybe, Then a bag of oranges he has fished out of the calf deep water. He grabs my pack and I stop him. We watch the jettison stuff spin away in the current. Large, dark shapes are moving beneath the surface. I spot a lone dorsal fin heading toward the crate. Nina is perfectly calm, though she is squeezing my hand as hard as can be. Behind her, a big wave is coming up on us, sideways. Her look of resignation inspires a burst of sadness and anger. The boatman guns the engine. The wave slams us. We're soaked, but somehow we don't go under and emerge from the blinding spray shooting towards the shore. The sweet woman who runs the lodge escorts us to our cabin, which is on a secluded rise, nestled into tall palms at the edge of the rainforest. Through the big window taking up most of the far wall, we can see the water that almost dragged us down. There is an assortment of pots and pans, a hairdryer, small electric radio, towels, a flashlight, and a can of bug spray lined up on the counter next to the sink in the kitchen area. A thick extension cord runs through the front window, bringing power. The shower runs on rainwater. We thank her and flop our bedraggled selves onto the big bed. When the woman leaves, Nina cries softly. We fall asleep in our soggy clothes. The distant sound of waves, no comfort. We wake in the night. The waves have quieted. The tide has receded. A coral reef and fish are visible in the clear water, their tropical colors illuminated by the full moon. The balcony outside the window is bigger than my apartment. A metal tub, a coal grill, and bucket are the only things on it. We peel ourselves out of our clothes, heat up buckets of water, and fill the metal tub. From our bath, we watch the fish in the water below and spot bats flying by, grabbing insects. I rub Nina's shoulders and gently whisper, "We made it." This inspires a fresh round of sobs. "What is it? What's wrong?" I ask. People don't get it. Get what? They don't understand. The only thing that's real is how we treat each other. Nothing we do is going to be remembered. Nothing, I say, comforts her. After an hour, I decide to trek down the cliff to the main area to see if I can find ice cream or anything that might cheer her up. I return to the cabin and notice the big window is open and the power cord is running through to the balcony. Nina's stopped sobbing. I don't like the low-pitched buzz coming from outside. Nina? She's motionless in the tub, her head tilted back, staring at the sky with that same awful resignation that came over her on the boat. I'm confused at why the cord is out here until I see the submerged hairdryer. A blue arc jumps from Nina's bruised skin, joining the pink and orange bolts that crackle over the water every second or two. The awful sound is coming from the radio, floating by her feet. The reek of ozone and burnt hair hits me, and I understand what she has done was no accident. And that's the end of the scene. I'll stop it there.
Wow. Okay, I have the book downstairs. I'll be back. I'm going to go see what happens.
She's going to read it now. That was brilliant. Yeah, beautifully read as well.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, the
yeah,
beginning
of
day.
A cheer for our Thursday evening here. Just keep it, we'll keep it happy.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say when the scene starts and they're in the boat and, you know, it sounds like it's going to sink. I was freaking out a little bit because, you know, while it's not one of my greatest fears, it's still kind of up there drowning, you know. And, you know, I'm not a great swimmer. I'm pretty much just won't drown. You know, that's like, you know. The best I'm going to do is not drowning. But, yeah, that would be like an awful way.
No,
awful
it is.
Way to
it,
go.
It, funny enough, it is actually my number one
terror.
I almost drowned as a small child, and it stuck with me. I didn't learn to swim till I was 33. And I'm not a big boat person. I went, my one and only cruise I went on, oh, must be maybe 6 years ago now, and it was good. I enjoyed it, and then you go out on deck, and then you realize you're on a boat because you know. Side, it's just like being right. A nice big hotel. It's like being a Vegas hotel sort of thing, you know. You're out in debt, and it's like there's a lot of water, and I can't see any land, and we're on this big floaty thing, and I've seen Titanic, so I know what happens. I know it. Boats sink. It's simple. It's basic physics. They're made of metal. They sink. And it's just like... funny story, many years ago, we used to do... a lot of trade shows, and we had one up in was it Manchester, and we stayed in it was actually a hotel. It was actually made out of an old boat, and it was on the dock side, all shored up and everything. Because I just thought it was just a hotel made to a boat, and I'm sat there, I was sat in the bar, and suddenly it moved. Right? What? And the chandelier was moving. Is it like, what? Boat, what do you expect? And I honestly nearly got off. And this thing was physically attached to the dock side, it wasn't going anywhere. And I absolutely peed my pants. It's moving.
Does anybody else realize it's moving?
Yeah, thank you for bringing all that back to the front of my mind, Daniel. I really appreciate that.
No. You are welcome, question mark?
Thank you. So, Daniel, I was going to ask, a lot of people fail, you know, I know when I started writing, I'll rattle off a few short stories, and people find it easy. Speaking personally, I find short stories probably harder than novels. I mean, how do you find it?
Yeah, I think the shorter and the more concise, the quote-unquote harder it is, at least for me. When I say harder, I mean I think the more craft and the more precision is coming along. I love short stories. I think it's quite an art form. So I love to read them. I love to write them. And like you said, I love to work on them. It does take a lot of work to get that emotion and information and entertainment across to the reader in a really concise way.
It is a good exercise, keeping things concise. Even when you're writing a novel, you know, Xgene will tell you, I can go off on tangents and ramble. But yeah, writing a short, again, because you've got, I don't know, whatever, 6,000-7,000 words, whatever, yeah? Or even shorter ones, you know, you've got to put the story across. It is. Did my first short stories were like nearly 20 words.
Yeah, and not only that, I think you have to make me care about the characters. I mean, so I think that might be the hardest part for me when I'm reading a short story, is that if I don't connect at all with the characters, I get done and I'm like, well, that was nice, but I didn't feel it
nice.
Because I want.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But I want to connect. I do.
Yeah.
So,
but again,
in a novel, you might have more opportunity to do that. But right, in the short story, you have to get to the heart of the character, get to that connection, build that connection with the reader. At least for me, I want that character and their conflict and their setting. I want it right up front. I want to connect from the beginning, or
yes.
I'm tuned out. Life's too short for bad stories, you know, short or otherwise.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So true. You know, when I was younger, I would pick up a book and it didn't matter if I hated it. I mean, I could actually be reading it going, man, I hate this. But I had to keep with it. I had to finish it. And now, I don't even know what it is now. I'll be reading a book, and I will still like it. I'm still going, yeah, this is a good book. I'm enjoying this. But at the same time, I'm like, what's next? You know, because I don't know. It's weird. But it is kind of like, you know, the older I get, the more I'm like, I don't have time for everything I want to read. So I'm going to read a little bit of this one and a little bit of that one. And, yeah, I freed myself from
obligation to read bad stuff, and I'm a free man now.
I'm free. Yeah, right. There's too much great stuff. There's too much great stuff out there. There's too much stuff that's gonna reach us that. And hey, when we get older, time is shorter and time may be running out. And I'm gonna go to my grave with the list of books, with the pile of books. If I don't buy another one, I'm gonna go to my grave with what I have.
Just
absolutely.
Yeah.
And Lord knows I'm not stopping buying books. You know, I can't stop.
Oh no! You can never have too many books, to be honest with you.
Right.
But no, I don't get the time to read for pleasure. But I used to, and I do miss that. But I do get to read some awesome books, you know, for work. You know, I was saying with movies, you know, there was a time I would, no matter how bad the movie was, I would sit through to the end. Now, if it's not grabbed me, I'll watch half a movie and think, oh fuck it, I'm just not gonna bother, you know. Or you know, you fall asleep and you wake up and you just, you know, you're not invested enough to rewind it and see what's gone on, you know. I really don't care. Because like I say, too short. Life is not too short for napping.
I'm a pro now. I've worked hard on my napping game. I'm proud of that. I mean, life is not too short for napping.
At what age does a power nap become just a nap? I mean,
is it a nap? Is it depression?
I'm gonna have a
is it the pandemic? Who knows? Or is it just
who cares?
Who knows? Who cares? I'm inspired to have a nap. Like right when we get off this show, I might have to just don't. No, I'm kidding.
I like it. Yeah, it's true. We are just about out of time for our first segment, and I've had so much fun though. We definitely have to get you back on the show. And have like the whole show,
thank
just
so
Daniel
much.
Brom.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, thanks.
Apologies
for the technical difficulties.
It happens. Thank you so much for having me on, and we'll see you again soon. Have a great night.
Yeah,
definitely.
And
thank
you, sir.
Thank you so much, Daniel.
And you. We'll speak to you later. Cheers, Daniel. Bye bye.
Cheers. Take care. Bye.
Bye bye. time. Yeah, we're with technical issues. Time has beaten us yet again, but and these ladies and gentlemen, this is our inaugural showing or listening, I suppose it is technically, of our brand new ad break. So are you ready for this?
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Extina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Extina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Get on the plane. but the horns, they blowing that sound. Way on down south. Way on down south, London town. Check out Guitar George. He knows all the chords. Mighty strictly rhythm, he doesn't want to make it cry or sing. Up under the light to play his thing. And Harry doesn't mind if he doesn't make the scene. He's got a daytime job, he's doing alright. He can play the honky tonk like anything. Saving it up Friday night with the Sultans.
Well, we are back, and I'm loving our new narrator for the ads.
I am too. I want to give a shout out to
awesome.
T. Quillen. He was great. Yes, I loved it. I was sad that it was so quick. I wanted, we just played over and over again.
you were sad that it's over so quick. That's what you say to your boyfriend.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah. We've stooped to sort of childhood humor. It's terrible. Terrible.
Well,
we
used to do potty humor all the time, so I think this is a step up. I do.
Yeah, we've not had a good old poo discussion for ages, actually, but
we haven't.
I think not since I think I described what came out the back end of my puppy dewormed her, but that was a while ago. Funny, to this day, I can't look at linguine the same way. I will never eat linguine again. That poor little mite. I mean, honestly, I've never, you know,
so gross.
I'm a zoologist, you know, and I've raised thousands of children and wiped lots of bottoms and all the rest of it, and very, very little grosses me out. But that, I nearly threw up picking that up out of the backyard. But hey, you know, we love our puppy. You know, she's awesome.
If you say so. No, she is. I love the pictures. I do. And
she's
you know.
So big now. She was 8 pounds when we got her, which was at the end of September last year. She's just gone 6 months, 46 pounds. We weighed her. She's 46 pounds, and she's only 6 months, so for God's sake.
Wow. Yeah.
Either she'll suddenly stop growing, or she's just going to be huge. But we love our puppy. She's great. She's great. Because she still thinks she's like a little 8-pound pot, and she comes to sort of crawl on your chest and lick your face, and I can hardly breathe. You're suffocating in this dog,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You you don't feel like you can push her off because, you know, you're getting love. So there's that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
There you have it. So, anywho, I'm assuming we have some sort of second guest coming up because we usually do.
We do. Our second guest, I'm going to do the intro and you push the button right away, okay? All right.
Indeed.
All right, our next guest is USA Today bestselling author Cora Kenborn.
Hello.
Hi, how are y'all?
Hello. Is that obviously a satellite delay there? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're good. We've had some tech. It's all been going on. But here we're battling on like troopers. And how are you this evening? You well?
I'm doing good. I took a nap in preparation to woke up. So I had the caffeine and the coffee and the chocolate. I'm good to go.
Yay. That sounds like a good night. Yeah. You know, speaking of all the weird, you know, the technical things and everything, and it's just like tonight is, you know, I even checked to see if there was a full moon because the dogs are just like being crazy right now, and it's not even close, so I don't know.
It really is.
And I'm hearing the echo again, James. I think it's me, but I don't know why.
It must be. So
I'm
are we
looking around?
It's one of those nights. It really is. I'll tell you what we'll do. While Xena sorts herself out again, we have a clip to play of Cora's book. Do you want to give us an intro to that, Cora? And we'll play the clip.
Sure. This is actually Blurred Red Lines. It is my first the first book in my Carrera Cartel trilogy, which is a dark mafia romance, and it is actually my first audiobook, so I was really excited for that to come out, and so far it's my most popular. So it's about Eden and Val. She is a bartender in Houston, and he is the head of a Mexican cartel, and she has just been kidnapped. So
wow, all going on.
There you go.
Is it set in Houston for any particular reason or just cause?
Houston, obviously, I like to, as if you can't tell from my accent, I am a Southern girl. And I'd like to keep some of my stories in the South. But just because of the location of being that the cartel is a Mexican cartel, I wanted to keep the location where they could cross the border and then go back into Mexico. So half of the story is set in Houston, half of it is set in Mexico.
Clever. Right,
yeah.
Okay, we will, without further ado, we'll play the clip and let's see if we can get rid of her echo problem. Okay.
My fist pounded into the cheap door as my foot kicked it from the bottom. She infuriated the hell out of me. I didn't have to coddle her. I could leave her in there to rot or shove warm, day-old water and crusty bread at her until she choked. Leaving her for the crew would have been easier. It had been risky to show my face to her. I should have just left the logistics to Emilio like he wanted, but for some reason, I wanted to see for myself that she was all right. How in the hell did Cereza turn out to be Lachey's sister? How'd I manage to bring the one woman who caught my eye into the middle of a cartel war? My arrogance will get me killed one day. I closed my eyes and paced the stark white bedroom. Blindly bumping into things posed no danger. Safe houses were anything but homey. A metal bed with sheets as soft as the needles on a porcupine was all that stood between my fist and the wall. And God, she made me want to plow through plaster. Pacing the room, I stopped occasionally to shove my hands through my hair, tearing at the strands until they fell around my temples. I ripped at the collar of my new shirt, buttons flying, and not giving a shit. She made me crazy. I craved to have those pouty lips under my command, kneeling before me with her hands bound until she stopped her incessant talking. I needed to see a moment of fear in her eyes, just a passing of uncertainty glaze her pale blue eyes, fearing my power over her. Then the fire would return. The cold power that lined her veins and steeled her jaw would demand her retaliation. She'd pull away, glaring at me with a mix of hatred and unwanted desire. All that raw hate and vengeance inside one woman set something alive inside me that lay dormant for years. I could say she had carnal desires with any woman, but Eden Lachey was a sparked live wire for the taking. The choice was mine to touch her and burn from the inside out, or step away and die from nothingness.
There's a fine line between love and hate. It wasn't until my heart blackened to a charred void that I understood the true meaning of the phrase. I found it amazing how much that fine line thickened while sweat dripped from the brow of someone I loved as I aimed a gun at his heart. Eden, you don't know what you're doing. His image blurred, although my hand held steady. Yours is the betrayal I never saw coming. Congratulations! In my head, the words sounded cold, despite the wetness that trailed from the corners of my eyes. Crawling to my feet, I paced the small space in front of him before I realized I'd uprooted from my spot. Keeping my breathing shallow, I focused on inhaling only when the rundown house reeked of dank mildew and death. The number of deaths that would be added to the stench remained to be seen. I never wanted to hurt you, he implored, begging me to recall what we'd meant to each other. When I stared vacantly at him, he licked his lips and attempted to reach me on another level. After all we've been through, it ends like this. You've left me no choice. There's always a choice. Hatred burned my eyes, incinerating the man reflected in them.
Oh, that was it.
That's it.
God, you know, I was sat back in my chair, sipping my water. I was really enjoying that, and then it all went quiet. Oh, that was great. I love that. Well done.
Well, you know, I had to leave you on a high note. You know, you have to read it anymore.
Oh, you see, yeah, I've got to buy the book, and obviously Xena's going to try and wangle a free one from you, because that was, I'm warning you now, she is totally going to try and get a free book from you. Don't give in to her. Don't encourage her.
I was going to say, when you... when you sign it, it's XTINA.
Yeah. I think I can handle that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I'd make it pay for it personally. So take your money.
I have never heard. I've never listened to one myself where they had both the male and the female voices, and that is super cool. And you were lying when you said what a hot voice he had. That was nice. I like that.
I was very particular. I really love, because you know, I always write in the dual POV, and I was really insistent that I wanted both voices, and we searched really long and hard to find the perfect male voice, and when we heard that accent, we knew we had found the perfect one.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I could listen to him for the whole book too.
So why you say that it's sort of your thing? You write from both POVs. Is there a particular reason for that? I mean, I've never seen that before.
I feel like it gives the reader a deeper perspective of the characters when you can get into both the male and the female heads. I feel like when you have just one point of view, usually it's the female, and you kind of get the male feeling from the female. But when you can read both of their perspectives and get into both of their heads, you know how they're feeling, and you're kind of in that moment with both of them. So you get more invested to me.
I like that, because obviously they will interpret each scene differently. I just think it's a fascinating way of doing that. I like it. It's rather clever, I have to say.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, the captive to lovers romance. It's probably one of my absolute favorites. I've read several, like, you know, I started with C.J. Roberts' The Dark Duet series, and I have to admit, I had it on my Kindle for a good couple of months, and I was too scared to actually start it, and then it became, like, one of my very favorite series, so I'm excited to read this.
I agree. That was one of my first forays into dark romance as well, and I've been writing all my life, but when I started writing, I actually kind of eased my way into dark romance. My first romance was a rock star romance, and I knew I was heading that way when I started writing a rock star romance and I killed someone in it. I was like, maybe I'm a dark romance author. Usually you don't kill someone in rock star romance. And so I kept getting a little bit darker and a little bit darker and a little bit darker. And I realized that was my genre. That's what I really, really like to write. And it just kept going towards the mafia. And mafia is where I found my love. That's what I keep writing. And it got really fun when my mother started reading it.
Oh, no.
She read it. You know, I was really nervous because she was reading it, and you know, all the stuff I have to research and all the stuff I have to write about. And I got really scared when she called me, and after she had actually read Blurred Red Lines, the book that you just heard, she goes, "So I read your book, and you know, my mom is like the quintessential Southern mother."
And she said, "Oh no!"
I read it. And I said, "So what did you think about it, mommy? You know, I'm bracing myself to hear what she thought about all this." And she said, "Well, you know, I really liked it. I wasn't really happy with all those F-bombs." You know, after all what I wrote in there, she's worried about the curse.
I love it, though. Moms, you know. My mom never was a fan of my darker stuff either. She was always, "Why can't you write anything nicer?" And I'm like, you know, I don't know. The dark stuff
this is not the way you were raised. Like, yeah, I would hope not, Mom.
I do love it, though. Yeah, no, definitely. But for real, I think it was the same way for me. I don't know about Rockstar Romance, but I did love them. And I actually just mentioned a couple of shows ago that one of my first Rockstar Romance books, and I'm not going to name what it was, but it was one of the ones that I got done with the book, and it had, it did not have a happily ever after, and I kind of want that in my romance. And it was a really good book, but I got done with it, and I swear I wanted to walk into oncoming traffic. I mean, I was just like devastated. It still affects me now. So
excellent. That's
you know,
a good thing.
I'm the exact same way. You know, I will. My readers laugh at me. I will put them through the ringer with this. You know, emotional. They called me names. They will throw their Kindle across the room. I will put everyone through every emotion imaginable. I will put my characters through some really horrible, horrible stuff. But at the end, I will make sure that they're happy. That's one thing that I have.
Yeah, I definitely want
happy
that.
In that weird way, but they're happy.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, especially if it's romance. Like, I've read some dark books that don't claim to be romance, and it will even tell you this is not a romance. And like, that's a totally different monster right there. You can do whatever you want, but when it's classified as a romance, I definitely want my happily ever after. You know, I really do.
But
you know, do you ever find with your male characters, have they ever done anything that maybe your readers could not forgive? Like, you know, you write it and they're assholes sometimes. Especially in this genre with the captive to lovers. You know, have you ever made your readers go, I can't forgive them for that?
One that actually comes to mind is one that I wrote recently. It's a fairy tale retelling, actually. It's called Starlet. And it's a retelling of Anastasia, which is actually one that's not retold very often. And my male character is kind of like he's the owner of like a TMZ type entertainment website in Hollywood, and he is not a nice guy. He uses a really innocent girl and kind of passes her off as the lost heiress, and she kind of has to pretend to be this girl, and he does a lot of not nice things. That I've had my readers kind of message me, is like, I'm not real sure I'm down with this guy. He's not one of my favorites. But I'm like, you know, he's pretty. He gets better. And he gets a little better.
Yeah.
But he's still, I'm not sure I like what he did to her. But, you know, he ends up being himself.
I totally know. It was the same way with, I think, any of the captive, you know, stories, you know, because the guy wouldn't be kidnapping the girl if, you know, he was a nice, sweet guy.
Yeah, but where's
exactly.
the fun in
and
that?
Think...
Where is the fun in that? That's what I want to know. So what did you call it? Captive to romance. Isn't that Stockholm syndrome?
Not always.
Not always.
That is literally the definition of Stockholm syndrome, if I'm otherwise mistaken.
Well, I don't
this is true love game.
Especially in Blurred Red Lines, because one thing that my readers always tell me is my heroines are very mouthy. They're very strong, mouthy women. And so they're not, I don't think. They may be captives, but I don't consider them weak women. And so they really stand up to their captors, I guess you would say. And,
sometimes
they end up ruling it.
When I was reading the captive stories, that's definitely what I would look for as well. I couldn't stand the weak, whiny women, I call them.
I definitely, that is one thing I can't.
Yeah.
Write.
Yeah, I want the strong ones, the ones that are, and I think every story that I have read like that have had the stronger women, and, cause I probably wouldn't read them otherwise. Yeah, we gotta have, and that might be one of the reasons that I was not a huge fan of the, I'm going to say it, 50 Shades of Grey.
No,
you know, Anna was in,
no, you said it,
Anna
you said it. How dare you?
She went there.
You just, you're a terrible person, why not? I was dying not to. I was doing my best not to mention it, but now you brought it up. Carl, I mean, what is it? Just me that hates that book, or does it have any redeeming qualities, Cora? Do you think?
Oh Lord, I'm about to get in trouble. I will say. I am a very strong proponent of a strong female lead.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And there
yes.
are a few times that I would have written her coming back a very different way. But, to each his own.
You know, I have to say, I read all three books, and I wasn't crazily impressed or anything, but they were fun. You know, it wasn't the worst thing I ever read. But I enjoyed the movie.
I read all three too, so.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed the movies. For me, they gave her a little more attitude than the books did, you know. And I found her character a lot. I laughed a few times, you know, during the movie, and I didn't get that in the book, so I don't know if they did that on purpose or not, but I definitely liked the Anastasia of the movies a lot better.
I agree. She did have a lot more attitude to the work. Yeah.
Definitely. So what are you working on now, Cora?
Oh, I am working on something very interesting right now. My friend Catherine Wilcher, I call her my sister across the pond. She is in London. And she also wrote a cartel series called The Santiago Cartel. And we just wrote a novella that came out in the Stalker anthology that put our next generation legacy. So the spawn of my cartel series and the spawn of her cartel series have now gotten together.
Nice.
So that happened in that series. But now we are writing a duet called the Corrupt Gods Duet. And so the son of Valentin Carrera, who is the voice you just heard, and then the daughter of Dante Santiago, which is her character, are going to be hooked up in this duet. So we're kind of combining our families.
I like that. And you said the Stalker anthology. I'm going to have to look that up because that sounds like something right up my alley.
It was really fun to write. That came out in February. It was 29 stories of varying degrees of stalker. So you have ours was kind of like the Romeo and Juliet type stalker, but then you have some hardcore stalker and then some really gory stalker. So, I mean, it's kind of something for everyone.
Now, speaking of stalkers, are you a fan of the show You?
Of the what?
The show, You.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, you should.
No.
I hear tell there's a third season on its way. It's really, really good. Really recommend it.
I still have to say, read the book. It's You by Caroline Kepnes, and it's really, really good. I don't know. For me, there was a few too many changes in the beginning for me to really appreciate the show or something. But the book is great.
Oh, really?
And,
oh, wow.
He's a stalker. But we're in his head. And so he doesn't think he's crazy or a stalker, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. You know, we're reading it going, oh, my God, this guy is loony. But because we're in his head and it's his thoughts, he doesn't think he is, you know. It's really interesting.
No.
I'm definitely going to have to look that up. You know,
yeah.
I very rarely have time to watch television. I'm either writing or I'm sleeping. So I'm going to have to check that out.
I feel you. I do.
You know, people say, have you watched this? I'm like, oh, that's actually on television.
Yeah, I hate to say this. We are, this echo is driving me insane. And Cora, you're going to have to accept my apologies and agree to come back on the show when we don't have this weird echo thing.
Sure, no problem.
Because I don't know if it's driving everybody crazy, but it really is driving me crazy. But you know, the weird thing is, James, when you start to talk, it stops. So I don't know. You're the catalyst.
Well, I'll just talk over everybody then.
It does. It seems to like. I think he does. I don't hear it at all when he's talking.
Excellent. I should just.
Yeah. Just talk, yeah, James. You can just.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. We're almost out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Cora. Really, really. Again, apologies for the on behalf of Blog Talk Radio on their crappy platform. I should be writing a stiff email to them in the morning. It's now bedtime here, so I'm going to bed now, and we will have Cora back on again very soon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
You guys have a great night.
And again, so I'm gonna go and cry in a corner. It's been one of those days. It is time to say goodnight, Xtina. Oh, and she's gone. Okay, well, I'm gonna say it for her. Good night, Xtina.
Is this the way life's meant to be?